Welcome back to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. 50 years ago, President Lyndon Johnson signed into law one of the most significant pieces of legislation in American history, the Civil Rights Act.
My fellow citizens, we have come now to a time of testing. We must not fail. Let us close the springs of racial poison. Let us pray for wise and understanding hearts. Let us lay aside irrelevant differences and make our nation whole.
Well, it hit me as I heard those words. We have a lot to live up to. And we wanted to look at what it took to get the Civil Rights Act passed, what it's meant to Michigan's history, and the challenges that lie ahead. So we welcome Leslie Fritz, who is the Deputy Director of the Michigan Department of Civil Rights. So good to have you with us, Leslie.
Thank you so much for having me.
Boy, those are some words, aren't they?
They really are. They are. We walk in big footsteps.
Indeed. And as I was reviewing what was in the actual act, it was a good reminder, that the Civil Rights Act of 1964 basically outlawed discrimination against African Americans and women. So it's very hard to overstate just how important this act was for our history and for all of us.
It really is the foundational act for so much of the law that we rely on today to make sure that people of all kinds, regardless of their background, regardless of their gender, their ethnicity, their religion, that they have access to equal opportunities in the workplace, in housing, in public accommodation. This really was the first big step. It led to the Voting Rights Act the next year, the Fair Housing Act in 1968, Americans with Disabilities Act a number of years later, and it was the model for a lot of state legislation like R. Elliott Larson's Civil Rights Act.
And actually, it should have been John Kennedy signing that because he really launched the push for this law with that big civil rights speech he gave in June of 1963, little more than 5 months before he was assassinated. Take us back as far as what was happening in America that kind of marched him right up to the edge and kind of forced him to make this push.
You're right. John Kennedy really began this process, and Lyndon Johnson saw it through to the end. And the early 1960s were a tumultuous time across this country. People remember the images of the fire hoses and the dogs and the protesters and
in Birmingham, Bull Connor,
across the country. And it was not isolated by the 1963-1964 time period. In 1964 alone, over 30 churches across the South were bombed. Violence was spreading community to community. The assassination of Medgar Evers had occurred. The Freedom Riders heading across the South had been attacked. There was incident after incident that really was growing. It began the decade before. Brown versus Board of Education occurred 10 years prior to the Civil Rights Act. And in that decade, we saw just a steady escalation of peaceful protests generating violent response, and something had to be done.
Also, you had the House and Senate Republicans in 1963 were eyeing black votes, so they came on board with this in a way that gave Kennedy the bipartisan
support.
There
certainly was a political component to it, and if you look at the way the vote came down, it was a very bipartisan vote in both the Senate and the House. It really broke down on geographic lines. Over 90% of representatives who sat in or came from states that had seceded or were former slave states voted against this bill. So it really was a geographic breakdown much more than it was a partisan breakdown. But it took somebody like Lyndon Johnson from the South, perceived as not being a liberal, to get it the final step. And there's some question, obviously we'll never know, but would President Kennedy have been able to take it that final step being a liberal New Englander versus a conservative Southerner? We'll never know that, but certainly Lyndon Johnson's political skills were a critical component.
And when the act became law, July 2nd, 1964, it was right in the middle of what's known commonly now as the Freedom Summer. What was happening then?
Freedom Summer was occurring in Mississippi. It was the effort that was made to recruit volunteers from across the country. And actually, the University of Michigan provided the largest number of volunteers that went to Mississippi that summer to register black voters. The right to vote was decades old at that point, but there were a number of barriers standing in the way of African Americans in the South registering successfully to vote. In Mississippi, you had to pass a number of tests. There was an 850-part code, and you could be asked about any one of the component parts and have to explain it.
And you can be darn sure certain people were being asked and certain people weren't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so the strategy was that if you brought in outsiders, white outside volunteers, that greater attention would be paid, that the national media would pay attention, that individual citizens and communities across Mississippi would pay attention. So this huge effort was undertaken to bring in volunteers to register voters. And they weren't all that successful looking back in the actual registration process. It took the Voting Rights Act the next year.
Yeah.
But they drew huge attention to the situation, to the circumstances that black voters across the South were facing. And then obviously the murders that occurred in Neshoba County, Mississippi, which were later immortalized in the movie Mississippi Burning, mm-hmm. really brought attention to the cause in a very unfortunate way. But the organizers of that effort knew that if violence was the response, which was a reality of day-to-day life in the South at that time, that the violence targeted against northern white volunteers would draw greater attention than violence targeted against southern blacks.
And there was a prominent Michigan name involved with this, with Viola Liuzzo.
Absolutely.
And tell us about her.
She is was a volunteer, mm-hmm. and was the only white woman killed during the civil rights struggle. Came down from Michigan, and was a part of that effort. And Michigan has a proud history of being very progressive. We have a number of people who played a very key role both in the activist effort as well as in the legal effort to get the Civil Rights Act passed. So we should be proud of that legacy, and frankly, we should be doing a better job today of living up to it.
Well, in fact, Michigan voters in 1963 approved that new state constitution, and that set up the very first Civil Rights Commission in American history. So why was it, do you think, Michigan was such a pioneer?
I wish I knew the answer to that question, because it might be good for our leaders today to know the answer. We had bipartisan progressive leadership. And you're right. The year before the Civil Rights Act, Michigan actually beat the country to the punch, mm-hmm. if you will. Mm-hmm. We created the first of its kind Civil Rights Commission, which we just celebrated our 50th anniversary, obviously, and gave that commission, the Constitution gave that commission tremendous power at a time when anti-discrimination efforts were not popular. George Romney was chairman of that convention, went on to be governor, was very outspoken on civil rights issues. Martha Griffiths, who most of us remember as lieutenant governor, was a congresswoman at that time, is largely credited with keeping gender in the Civil Rights Act and opening the doors for women. We had very loud voices at that constitutional convention who demanded that not only did we put the regular statement every constitution have, we believe all men are created equal, but that we take that next step and we create this commission and give it real strength and power to enforce laws. And that's the legacy we try to uphold every day at the department.
If you've just joined us, we're looking at the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 as we talk with Leslie Fritz, who's deputy director of the Michigan Department of Civil Rights. 50 years later, you kind of touched on this a moment or two ago. How far are we from the promise of this act, do you think?
A long ways, I think. I mean, the reality is the change in the law was a necessary first step. Mm-hmm. You can't achieve anything until the laws are right. But the law can't change people's hearts and people's minds. And the work that we do 50 years later is really more about the hearts and minds than it is about the legal barriers that stand in the way. All of those laws I referred to earlier, including the Michigan laws, the Elliott Larson mm-hmm. Persons with Disabilities Civil Rights Act that we have here, create the legal framework for equality. It's up to us to enforce it, and it's up to us to convince and to help people understand why it matters. Why, if you are a person of privilege, and in this society that means a white, middle-class, educated suburbanite, probably. Why are you better off if we are an equal society? And that's the case that we try to make every day. It's an argument you hear being made now in the context of LGBT equality. Why does it matter to me as somebody who is straight whether or not we afford equality to people who are of a different sexual mm-hmm. orientation? Well, the economic realities affect us all. And we all are impacted when our communities are unequal. And making that case and helping people understand what it means to them individually in their neighborhoods, in their workplace, in their communities is the task that remains. And it's a we've been on this 50th anniversary tour for the department, and at every one of the stops I've said and meant it'd be great if we were on our farewell tour. You know, the job was done. We could close up shop and we could go home. Mm-hmm. But we all know that that's not the world that we live in, and so the work goes on.
You look at the poverty, you look at access to good education, economic opportunities, and then as you said, when will we see LGBT people enshrined with their rights formally acknowledged in the Elliot Larson Act mm-hmm. And on a federal level as well? About the LGBT movement, do you see that tracking somewhat along the same course as the civil rights movement did? Or does it have a different path?
Well, it certainly has a lot of similarities. I mean, anytime you have a group of people who are politically powerless fighting to get into the mix, you certainly see the same elements of the Civil Rights Act of the 60s. So a lot of the circumstances are the same. Obviously, it's a different time. Mm-hmm. We live in a different world now than existed 50 years ago. But it really is at heart the same question. Are we going to treat all people regardless of where they come from, who they look like, what they believe, what religion they practice, the same? Are we going to afford them equal opportunity? And that's the question that rightfully so LGBT individuals in Michigan are asking. And in this day and age, when we know the economic realities and the consequences of discrimination, to know that we live in a state where you can still be fired, you can be denied an apartment or a mortgage, you can be turned away from a restaurant or a hotel because of your perceived sexual orientation, it's hard to make that jive with the Michigan we want to live in and to somehow justify that in today's world. And hopefully our legislative members will catch up and will take action before this year ends. I think the coalition is building for the first time in a long time. I think there's real momentum. And something we've been fighting at the Department of Civil Rights for about 35 years might actually come to pass, and that would be a really good next step for civil rights in Michigan.
It's amazing to think, truly, for those of us who remember watching the news and watching Bull Connor's fire hoses and dogs attacking those children in Birmingham, because there it was served up by Huntley Brinkley during dinner time with mom and dad. We grew up hearing President Johnson talking. So here's 50 years later, and it makes you wonder if we were having this conversation in another 50 years looking at the 100th anniversary, or our descendants will, Leslie, what kind of conversation we might be having.
Hopefully it'll be a different one than the one we're having today. But the reality is the world we live in is getting more diverse every day, not less. We certainly see it in our communities here in Michigan. States across the United States are seeing it as well. We are a diverse world, and with technology and all of the progress of the last half century, we are an interconnected world. And so learning how to function successfully, how to live, how to work, how to exist in that world is the challenge our children will face and their children will face. And it's certainly not going to become less diverse as the years pass.
We've been observing the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act as we speak with the Deputy Director of the Michigan Department of Civil Rights. Leslie Fritz, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.